Thanks for joining us. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Diane is at a memorial service for Tony Blankley, a dear friend and frequent guest on the Diane Rehm Show. Last fall, Ohio police killed 49 exotic animals set free by their distraught owner. A report out this week says Burmese pythons released into the Florida Everglades are causing severe declines in the region's mammals. These type of reports have brought scrutiny to the exotic pets industry. Joining us in the studio to discuss this issue, Wayne Pacelli of the Humane Society of the United States and Andrew Wyatt of the United States Association of Reptile Keepers. And joining us from a studio in Las Vegas, Zuzana Kukal of a group called Responsible Exotic Animal Ownership. Welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're going to invite our listeners to join our conversation just a bit later. You can call us at 800-433-8850. Send us an email at drshow@wamu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Well, Wayne, first of all, how many exotic pets are there? How big a thing is this across the country?
Well, we're not really sure, and there are so many different species of exotic pets. There are people who keep lions, tigers, mountain lions, and other big cats. There are people who keep bears. The man in Ohio, Terry Thompson, had, there were 18 Bengal tigers, 17 lions. There were grizzly bears, almost all of them killed when he let them out. There are people who have all sorts of primates. Some people still have chimpanzees, even though they're an endangered species in the wild. There are folks who have large constricting snakes, whether it's green anacondas or Burmese pythons. There are people who have alligators, crocodiles. And I think, you know, there are people who actually are quite interested in these animals. They're drawn to the exotic. They're drawn to these animals for some reason, but we don't think they should have them in their households as pets. Certain animals are domesticated. Dogs and cats have been domesticated for thousands of years. They belong in our homes. They enjoy our companionship. And generally speaking, they don't pose enormous risks to us, and they are capable of being trained and of being obedient to some degree. Tigers, you know, are not that way, and so many of these animals are large, powerful, predatory animals. They don't belong in our homes, not just as a matter of safety for us, for safety for them too. There are no good outcomes for these animals. They almost always end up injured or dead or relinquished.
Now, Zuzana, you are an exotic pet owner yourself, is that right?
Yes.
And so tell us what animals you have yourself.
We own exotic cats. Everything from small bobcat to African lion, then we have wolf hybrids, and we have reptiles.
So we heard Wayne kind of make the case of raising concerns about these exotic pets. Why do you want to have them? What's the appeal?
The question is, why not? If we as American citizens can choose what type of domestic pet we can have, what car to drive, what house to buy, why should exotic animals be treated any different?
Well, Andrew White, I know that you have some exotic pets yourself. What do you have?
Well, I don't keep many animals anymore because of my work for our trade association and travel. So I have surrogates keeping the animals that I used to keep.
What did you used to have?
I've had all number of, and, you know, there's a little bit of a bit disconnect here. Not all reptiles are exotic. Much of the trade in reptiles in the United States are animals that are native to the United States, like milk snakes and king snakes, which I've worked with all of those, and as well as boas and pythons.
Now, we've seen this report just out a few days ago about Burmese pythons released into the Florida Everglades causing some ecological problems. Tell us about this study. What did it conclude?
Are you speaking of the recent study that was just published?
That's right. The one published just, I guess, on Monday.
Well, I think that the press and the media got quite carried away with the press release and actually reported a number of things that are not detailed in the paper at all. They're trying to draw some direct correlation of Burmese pythons in the Everglades and a decline in mammal populations. And in the paper, there is no direct causation linked to the Burmese python. It's speculative. And there are numerous studies out there that have been done in regards to mammal declines and bird declines in the Everglades that are linked back not to the Burmese python, but back to hydrology and high levels of mercury.
Do you think that, first of all, how do these pythons from Burma get into the Florida Everglades?
Back in the early 90s, there was a facility on the edge of the Everglades that was devastated and destroyed by Hurricane Andrew, releasing a bunch of Burmese pythons that were pretty much all genetically the same. That's why you see that when you look at the genetics of the pythons that are feral in the Everglades, they're all come from the same genetic stock. They're virtually identical, and that was because of a massive release of very similar animals during Hurricane Andrew.
So you think they're not a problem? It's not a problem to have these pythons in the Everglades?
I think that pythons in the Everglades, as well as other more invasive and more dangerous animals to the environment of the Everglades, are a problem. You know, feral cats have wreaked havoc on not only birds and reptiles and small mammals, but they've spread disease. There's millions of them in every single state in the union, yet there doesn't seem to be quite the concern of the impact, the massive impact that they have not only all over the United States, but all over the world. Now, the pythons are certainly alien pythons in the Everglades are certainly a problem, but it has been limited to three counties in the very southern tip of Florida.
So this study was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Got a fair amount of attention. Wayne, what's your view of its conclusions?
Well, let me just say, Susan, again, thank you for having me from the Humane Society of the United States on, and it's good to be on with Andrew and Susanna. And I just want listeners to understand, Andrew and Susanna are advocates of the exotic pet trade. They have fought regulations at the federal level and the state level to restrict private ownership of these animals. So a lot of titles are a little confusing, like U.S. ARC, Animal Reptile Keepers. That sounds like a nice thing. These are exotic animal owners who want to protect the right of private citizens to have dangerous predatory animals in their homes, even if they're causing ecological havoc, even if they're causing public safety threats, and even if the animals themselves are enormous victims of this trade. Now, this report that just came out, it was just reported on in the Washington Post yesterday and in other papers throughout the country, is devastating just on the single question of the ecological impact of one species of large constricting snakes, the Burmese pythons. The report said that these scientists, again, these are top scientists in the field reporting in a peer-reviewed journal, said that populations of raccoons in the areas where Burmese pythons are dropped 99% compared to 13 or 14 years ago before pythons colonized the Everglades. Possums also dropped 99% and bobcats 87.5%. Marsh and cottail rabbits as well as foxes were not seen at all. Now, let's remember that the South Florida Water Management District proposed listing nine species of large constricting snakes on the list of injurious species only because of the threat on the ecology of Florida and other southern states. U.S. ARC and other organizations fought this, delayed the enactment of it, and the Obama administration caved in and listed only four of the nine species that the scientists from the U.S. Geological Service said should be listed. This report makes it plain where the right and wrong positions were. This is a devastating circumstance for the Everglades, where our nation has put billions of dollars to protect one of the most sensitive and critical habitats in the southern tier of the United States.
Well, Andrew, we saw this decision by the Obama administration in middle of January to ban imports of four snake species. Was that the right thing to do?
Well, there's certainly not the science there to support that decision out of hand. The scientists from around the world have criticized that work as not scientific and not suitable as the basis for legislative or regulatory changes. They've had a lot of problems with the science, their data set. is not accurate. The conclusions drawn are quite big leaps, and that's one of the problems they've had. Is that they have not had strong basis for science to push the rule forward. It's also important to remember, Mr. Pacelli says that we've spent a lot of time advocating for the responsible ownership and trade, as well as animal welfare of reptiles. That is true. But our annual budget is literally just a fraction of his postage stamp budget. And the fact is he spent somewhere in the neighborhood over the period of 2005 to 2009, he has spent over $17 million lobbying Congress to advocate for limited animal ownership,
It's actually much broader than that, Andrew. It's anti-dog fighting. It is combating puppy mills. It's combating factory farming. It's restricting private ownership of primates and other animals. I mean, let's remember, Susan, you know, we're not just talking about snakes. I mean, Andrew is a snake enthusiast. I mean, that's fair to say,
yes,
that you're a snake enthusiast. We're talking about a larger category of animals. You know, when we're talking about chimpanzees, we're talking about the woman in Connecticut had her face bitten off and her digits bitten off by these animals.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the laws in states that restrict these kind of animals and the states that choose not to restrict them. We'll take your calls, 1-800-433-8850, and read some of your emails. Shoot us an email, drshow@wamu.org. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. We're talking this hour about the issue of exotic pet ownership in this country, and we're joined now by phone from Dayton, Ohio, by Tim Harrison. He's with a group called Outreach for Animals. He trains first responders on how to deal with exotic pets and their owners. Tim Harrison, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So how did you get interested in this area?
I got interested back when I worked for a veterinarian back in the 1970s. We go out, and every once in a while, somebody get a python in their backyard or a bear tied up in the back, you know, back somebody's barn. But after 1995, it, like, exploded when reality TV started. Everybody started bringing the most dangerous creatures in their home because they wanted to imitate what they saw on TV. Monkey see, monkey do. Like I say, Susan, remember 101 Dalmatians? When that came on, everybody bought a Dalmatian.
I know that you were involved in the response in Zanesville, Ohio, that terrible incident last fall where dozens of exotic animals were released by their distraught owner. Tell us what happened there from your perspective.
From my perspective, this gentleman got out of prison, and he decided he was distraught. There was no question about that. He decided to turn all those exotic, 50 of the most dangerous creatures on the planet loose, and it was right next to Zanesville, Ohio, right next to a major Interstate 70. Turned them loose, cut the cages so you couldn't put them back in, and then he poured blood all over his own body, laid down, and shot himself in the head. So he actually set up a semi-booby trap for the first responding officers to come up. They had to go in and get him, so they had to actually shoot the animals to get to his location.
Well, it was a terrible story. In Ohio, what's been the aftermath of that case?
Well, they're working right now. We actually had Governor Strickland actually had a very strong executive order that was supposed to have been signed in May 1st, 2011. But Governor Kasich, the new governor, came in, surrounded himself with the wrong people. Believe the hype that you're getting from the other two guests you have on your show. There, nothing's going on out here. There's no problems. Just leave it alone. And he ended up dropping the executive order. And the sad part about that is now he's got his arm almost twisted behind his back. He has to do something. Now the whole world is watching what's going on in Ohio.
For Governor Kasich.
That's correct. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so for first responders, what advice do you give them when it comes to dealing with exotic animals when they get a call?
Well, first of all, there's no way to teach anybody any of this stuff. I teach for Homeland Security out of Texas A&M College at a place called Disaster City, the top training facility in the world for governors and, you know, government officials and fire chiefs and police chiefs. It's impossible to teach a group of people like that how to, you know, go in to respond to a home. You got to remember, every time there's a dangerous exotic animal situation, like the chimpanzee in Connecticut or me catching a cougar in downtown Dayton, it's always the cops that are first. Always. Remember the San Francisco Zoo situation where the tiger got out, killed the boy, seriously injured the other two kids there, and it was the police they called in to have help. So when the professionals have a hard time handling these animals, why was it an untrained people should be allowed to have them in their homes?
And why do you think they want to have them in their homes? I know you just talk with exotic pet owners when you're called in to deal with situations that become troublesome. What do you think the appeal is?
I think the main appeal is that they see it on TV. Now, this is an American phenomenon. I travel all over the world and lecture. You don't see it in India. You don't see it in Africa. You don't see it in Australia. They respect their wildlife. We've got a situation here. We have TV shows constantly bombarding people, telling them it's okay to bring a surgically altered animal, as you see on TV, or a medicated one. On there, it's taking a little something to take the edge off, and that's what they think the tiger's going to be like when they buy it. Bring it home, and then you get a baptism in reality real quick, Susan, that this animal doesn't act like the one on TV. It's got its claws, and it's going to hurt me. And the sad part about that is you can buy a tiger, Susan, but you can't buy common sense.
And Tim Harrison, one last thing. You've been involved in so many of these cases. What's the most dangerous animal that you've been involved in trying to bring under control?
Yeah, I've lost friends from one friend was killed by a Burmese python, and another friend killed by a venomous rhinoceros viper in his own home here in the state of Ohio. But the most dangerous, Susan, is chimpanzees by far. And I just helped remove a chimpanzee here from the Centerville area of Ohio. So the sad part about it is they are out there. Wayne is absolutely right. They're out there. But one thing, you've got to remember, they're legal, they're cheap, and they're easy to get. You get them off the auctions. You can get them off the Internet, anything you want. You can get a king cobra to your house within 48 hours.
All right. Tim Harrison, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. I want you everybody to remember, too, just let these animals be animals. You know, just try to make them into something that they're not.
Thanks very much. Tim Harrison from Dayton, Ohio, of Outreach for Animals. Well, Susanna, I want to give you a chance to respond to the point he made that it's dangerous and inappropriate to have these exotic animals in people's homes. How would you respond?
Well, I would like to provide some statistics. In USA, an average 3 people get killed each year by all exotic animals, that from pets to zoos, 3 per year. Horses kill 20 to 25 people, dogs up to 30 people. Traffic accidents kill 45,000 people each year. I don't see where is the public safety issue here. And most of these people who are killed by exotic animals are the owners, which means it's occupational or hobby hazard. It's not a public safety issue. And regarding to the chimp incident, nobody in the recent history got killed by non-human primate in the USA. It was an unfortunate incident, but this woman went there voluntarily. This chimp wasn't running free at the local shopping mall. The woman went there, she knew the chimp, she took the chance. But the first face transplant occurred in France, and it was due to the puppy chewing the woman's face off. But nobody's screaming to ban puppies because it's not an exotic animal. It's not about danger. It's about political agenda to ban exotic animals from private possession.
It is indeed a...
I wasn't done.
Susan just waved me on.
Good to hear your perspective. I wanted to give Wayne a chance to respond.
Oh, it is indeed a political agenda to stop private citizens who typically have no idea what they're getting into from obtaining these animals. And again, we can isolate one issue as public safety or ecology or animal welfare, but when you roll it all up, when you aggregate all of these compelling issues, there is just no good reason for society to allow people to do this. They may want to do this very desperately. you know, the dog fighters we deal with or the puppy millers that we deal with, they want to do what they want to do desperately, but society balances the various interests here. And when you look at just the cost issue, I mean, what is the cost to society when you have basically eliminated a class of medium-sized and small mammals in the Everglades after we spend billions of dollars? Or Tim Harrison, whom you had on from Ohio, who's really one of the nation's leading experts, a guy who's on the front lines, he's putting his life in danger responding to these cases because first responders have no idea how to deal with a chimp or a tiger or other animals that are at large, because you have a class of reckless exotic animal owners in this country. And of course, Susan, we do have policies. 18 states have adopted laws to forbid private ownership of large categories of dangerous exotic animals. Other states regulate it. 7 states have no rules whatever. We at the Humane Society of the United States are working with first responders. We're working with environmentalists. We're working with responsible animal owners to say, no, this is out of bounds. Let's stop this madness. And Susanna and others may think it's great to have an African lion in their backyard, but we don't have absolute freedom in society, especially when it comes to animals who are vulnerable.
Let's go to the phones and let some of our listeners join our conversation. Let's go to Chet first. He's calling us from Georgia. Chet, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking the call.
Yes, welcome.
Well, I don't even know where to start. I'm the executive director of the Georgia Wildlife Rescue Association. Our main focus is to save Georgia's native wildlife. We spend a great deal of time dealing with exotics, and since I was a small child, I've had pythons and boas and anacondas. I have 11 right now. All the snakes that I have now actually came as a result of either being captured or from being released or escaped, and I've completely changed my point of view there. Next week, we're going to try. We have a warm spell right now. We're actually trying to find a snake on the Withlacoochee River that has been described by numerous people, and we know it's either an anaconda or a python. And we're not talking the Everglades. We're talking South Georgia in February. So I take issue with the trying to contain it to the southern tip of Florida, because I believe with global warming, which is a whole other issue, they're moving further north.
Well, now, you've had these exotic snakes yourself, but rescue snakes, I guess you'd call them, the way we talk about rescue dogs. What do you think about people who want to buy these snakes and other reptiles, and because they're interested in them, because they think that's a great hobby? What do you think about that?
There may be some middle-of-the-road solution or compromise with snakes. The problem here is when you're talking about a situation like you had in Ohio, that's something that's ridiculous. When it comes to pythons, right now anybody with a kid can go in a store and buy this squirmy little snake that's going to turn out to eventually be 12 to, you know, 20-something feet long. Myself, I got in a situation several years ago where I could not get one off of me. It was my own fault that it bit. The problem was, even with 2 adult people helping me, I couldn't get it off. I ended up jumping in a swimming pool, holding my breath, and it actually, you know, released before I did. So that's comical now, but it was not then.
I bet it wasn't. Andrew Wyatt, would you like to respond?
Yes, I would. Apparently, the gentleman is not familiar with the cold weather studies that were done in Florida. Down there in the Everglades, where the University of Florida conducted a study of Burmese pythons that were radio tagged in Everglades National Park, during the study, 9 of 10 of the radio tagged snakes succumbed to the cold, and that was in the very southern tip of Florida. The 10th did not succumb immediately. They pulled it out and tried to resuscitate it, but it eventually died of respiratory infection. The USDA did a study in Gainesville, Florida, and 7 of 9 of their study animals died. The only 2 that didn't, it was because they were given artificial warm refugia. In South Carolina, Savannah River Ecological Lab did a study with 10 pythons that to try and determine whether they could live outside of the state of Florida. all 10 succumb to the cold.
And is this a good thing, Andrew, that animals are freezing to death? I mean, this is
It's not a good thing, Wayne. They shouldn't be there. I don't disagree with that. My point is that trying to scare America into thinking that pythons are going to crawl out of the Everglades and spread across the country, eating kindergartners and
no
family pets on their
that.
Way.
No one
Wayne.
Suggested that.
Wayne.
No one suggested that. Point to a single incident. What we said is that the U.S. Geological Service did a report in 2009 that said that 9 species of large constricting snakes have the capacity or the capability to colonize portions of the southern tier of the United States. That was the U.S. Geological Service.
Were you aware of the fact that about a dozen scientists from the National Geographic Society, University of Florida, Texas A&M, and others criticized that report as being not scientific?
I'm aware of anaconda owners and python owners who claim to be scientists saying that they
How about the professor of zoological medicine at the University of Georgia? Well, how about the herpetologist for the National Geographic Society?
Anyone can brandish science in favor or against. The preponderance of science says that this is a reckless practice.
I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We're taking your calls, 1-800-433-8850. Let's go to San Antonio, Texas, and talk to Shannon. Shannon, you're on the air.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a quick statement, and then I'll take my statement off the air. But one of your guests stated that why not to people owning wild animals and comparing these animals to living necessities like homes and automobiles that we need. You need shelter, of course. You need a car to get around to go to your job. And her argument is just absolutely ridiculous. At no time should people, just because they think they can, without exercising good sense, be able to keep these wild animals that are wild for a reason. And this obviously is a major problem on a mass scale.
Zuzanna, thank you very much for your call. Shannon, Zuzanna, I believe you were the one who made the comment that Shannon was referring to. What would you say to her?
I would say that car is really not a necessity. There are many people in the world who don't own a car. You can always ride a bike or take a bus. Car is a luxury. Pets are a luxury. Whether they are domestic or exotic, pets are a luxury. It's not a necessity. So that's where I go back to my original statement. Why shouldn't we have a choice whether we want exotic or domestic pet? Besides, most of the exotic pets are really small. Many of them are small reptiles you can keep in an apartment. And most people really don't own pet tigers. It's a myth. Most of the tigers are in commercial license, federal license, USDA facilities. There may be 50 tigers that are strictly pets. By pet, I mean it's a non-commercial animal. It's our money pit. So,
Suzanne, I wonder with the pets that you have, what about if you have a neighbor who has, you know, a little dog or some small children and is worried about safety issues, uncomfortable about being living in a neighborhood where there are some exotic pets. Does that situation ever come up for you?
Well, let me explain our situation. We live out in a very rural area on large acreage, and our neighbors have large acreages too. Our neighbors love our animals. If our lion doesn't roar one night, they call, Is he okay? Is he fine? They worry about our animals. We also have an emergency plan with our emergency department. They know the layout of our property. They know what to do. We had 3 platoons on 3 different days come over to our property and get training what to do in case there is a fire or other kind of emergency. So people in our area, they know about us. We train them. They are comfortable with us.
All right. Wayne, what do you think?
Let me just say that, Susan, we at the Humane Society of the United States, we maintain a number of wildlife and other animal care facilities. We spend millions of dollars on these facilities a year. We don't want one of these animals. They all come to us, or we rescue them from some terrible crisis or circumstance. I travel around the country. I go to big cat rescue groups. I go to chimpanzee facilities. We have thousands of organizations, truly thousands of organizations that exist to clean up the messes of people like Susanna and others who make reckless decisions to acquire these animals. They are foisting a problem on the rest of society. And fortunately, there's a very generous philanthropic sector in animal welfare, one that's struggling every day of the year to make budget to care for these animals who are all castaways. They're victims of cruelty. They're victims of ignorance. That all of us, none of these groups, Susanna's Rexano group, which is a group that fights every attempt to restrict exotic animals, Andrew's group, they're not putting money in any significant amount into the care of these animals. It's the humane community that's doing it. And we're the ones driving the policies because we see that it's costing society. It costs in terms of injuries, ecology, most of all, animal cruelty, because they're almost always victims. And Tim Harrison, who was on before, will tell you that none of these animals, the tigers and the lions, the chimps, ever have it good at the end of the day.
I want to give Andrew Wyatt a chance to respond, but we're going to take a quick break first, and then we'll come back. We'll take more of your calls, read more of your emails. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Ally Bank, offering IRA savings products and a Raise Your Rate 4-year CD. Learn more at allybank.com. By the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org. And by Constant Contact, committed to helping small businesses and nonprofits succeed. Learn more at constantcontact.com. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Baratunde Thurston about his new book, How to Be Black, part memoir and part satirical self-help book with chapters like How to Be the Black Friend and How to Speak for All Black People. Thurston is also a comic, director of digital for the satirical newspaper The Onion, and co-founder of the blog Jack and Jill Politics. Join us.
Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. With us on the phone from Las Vegas is Susanna Kukal, president and co-founder of Responsible Exotic Animal Ownership, or Rexano. And with me here in the studio, Wayne Pacelli, president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, and Andrew Wyatt, president of the United States Association of Reptile Keepers. We've been talking about the practice of exotic pets across the country. Before the break, Wayne had made a criticism of groups like yours, Andrew, saying that you don't spend money on rescuing animals, exotic animals who find themselves in perilous circumstances after being someone's pet. What would you say to him?
Well, I would say that Wayne is misinformed. I think he's not aware of what's going on out there. The reality of it is there was a recent opinion poll by the Opinion Research Corp that 71% of Americans believe that HSUS is an umbrella organization for humane societies and pet shelters around the country. The reality is they spend less than
a group that's an attack organization.
They spend less than 1% about 0.5% on actual shelters.
But
the reality
wrong,
of it is,
Andrew,
let me go back.
That's completely false, Andrew.
Now,
Andrew, you know what the point is?
Am I going to be allowed to speak?
You're making a ridiculous charge. You're making a false charge. What this Center for Consumer Freedom with Rick Berman, hired by Rick Berman, who attacks anti-smoking groups and Mothers Against Drunk Driving, is that's the money we give to other organizations as a grant. We take care of our own animals, Andrew. I'll be happy to show you around Black Beauty Ranch, where we spend a couple million dollars a year. I'll take you to the largest wildlife rehab center in the United States, which is in Broward County, that we run. It's not an issue of what we give to others. We do our own work. We don't have to give grants to other organizations.
I would just say that this show is not about the Humane Society. It's about the keeping of exotic pets and what it means for all of us, for our ecology, for pet owners, for those who might be concerned about it. So I think this is not an issue that we want to explore in this hour.
Okay. There is a point, though, back to the money that is being put back into animal welfare. Recent rulemaking by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that would add 4 constricting snakes to the injurious wildlife list of the Lacey Act creates a situation where hundreds of thousands, if not millions of animals could be displaced if someone had to leave the state that they live in, because then they would become Lacey Act felons if they transfer them across state lines. So there's an initiative out there called the Burmese Python Initiative. It's at savetheberms.org, where we've raised $150,000 to be able to house and care for these animals so that they don't end up being euthanized or out on the streets or whatever, so that they can have a safe place to go and be rehomed. And I would challenge Wayne to donate some money to the Burmese Python Initiative.
We're going to clean up the mess that you guys have created by blocking the laws that you've created so much cruelty. You've created such ecological havoc, causing our nation millions and millions of tens of millions of dollars because of your selfish pursuit.
You can't document any of that.
Private ownership of animals that do not belong in our homes. Lions, tigers, chimpanzees, Burmese pythons, alligators belong in the wild. And they belong in accredited zoos and in reputable sanctuaries. And if we all spend our money chasing all of these animals that are getting out there because of a series of irresponsible actions of exotic animals, we'll all go bankrupt. We need front-end policies to prevent these animals from getting out to begin with.
Now, we've had several emailers send in suggestions when it comes to trying to strike some kind of balance in this debate. Here's one from Nick, who writes us in Tampa. He says, why do advocates of restricting exotic animal ownership come down to ending individuals' rights to own them? Why don't restriction advocates put forth individual education and training efforts in order for individuals to own them? And a similar point from Carolyn, who writes us from Dallas. She says, you have to pass a test to get a driver's license. Why not license dangerous animal ownership? What do you think about that idea, Wayne?
I think it's ludicrous, Susan, how our government doesn't have money to be training and testing people and set up a whole regulatory system. We don't regulate dog fights. We don't regulate cockfights. There are certain behaviors that we judge to be outside the bounds of the norms of a society. These are wild animals. Burmese pythons belong in Burma, Myanmar, and other parts of Southeast Asia. Reticulated pythons belong in their native habitats. Tigers belong in India or China, not in people's homes in Lisbon, Ohio.
Are there regulations that stop short of banning ownership of exotic pets that do something to address this issue in a way that you think makes sense?
I don't think that it makes sense to regulate keeping dangerous wild animals as pets. There are no good outcomes for these animals. Most people get them very naively. Andrew may be an expert keeper. If he is one of very few people who are experts. A lot of people get these animals impulsively.
Wayne paints them, with a broad brush.
They get them young. Do you have any data to show that people are... I can tell you, Andrew...
I can't prove
a
negative, Wayne.
You may not know, because we deal with the discards of people who are involved in your industry all the time. The humane community has thousands and thousands of rescue groups that exist because people make the wrong decisions with animals.
People make the wrong decisions with children's automobiles and their pets, too. And you taking the worst-case scenarios and painting with a broad brush to try and characterize everyone as being the worst-case scenario.
No, I'm not saying the worst case.
I'd like to get Susanna in on this conversation. Because, Susanna, I'm wondering, as an advocate for exotic pet ownership, are there restrictions and regulations that go short of a ban that you think would make sense, or do you think this is an area that should basically be just left to individuals deciding for themselves?
Right now it's too late because most of the communities already have some regulations on the local level, even if the state doesn't have regulations. But I would like to address Wayne's comment that these animals should be in the wild. First of all, wild is disappearing. Even many animals in USA that venture into human habitat, just like cougars, they need to be killed because there is no place to take them back. You cannot just dump cougar in other cougar's territory. The other thing he said was that these animals should be in accredited zoos and sanctuaries. It's interesting to point out that the last few fatal attacks by elephants and big cats happened in accredited sanctuary in Tennessee and in AZA zoos. It was the jaguar in Colorado and tiger in San Francisco. What's interesting about the San Francisco incident, there was one tiger that got loose and it killed a visitor and injured two more visitors.
But Susanna, to go back to the question that I ask you, are there regulations that you think make sense that would help strike some kind of balance, either on the kinds of animals that can be owned or the way in which they need to be kept? Or do you think this is really, for you, an issue in which you think no regulations are appropriate?
I believe in fair regulation as when it comes to caging and perimeter fence. However, what's happening now, when there is a regulation of bans proposed, it exempts the AZA zoos and sanctuaries and bans everybody else, which is not fair. I think the law should apply equally. I believe in fair regulation, but it should apply equally. There should not be exemptions, because where I was going with this, the last few fatal incidents occurred in facilities that are usually exempt from these bans, which makes no sense.
Andrew, here's a tweet that we got with a question directed for you from Stephen. He tweets, if 9 of 10 pythons succumb to a Florida cold snap, how are the glades still full of pythons? Why is this still a problem if they die with a cold snap?
According to Scott Harden at Florida Fish and Wildlife, currently their state wildlife organization is estimating that over the last 2 years, the cold winters, that as much as 80 to 90% of the pythons have actually succumbed to the cold. Back to the framework of being able to keep these animals responsibly, U.S. ARC promotes a set of best management practices in regards to this animal. We've passed our best management practices into law. In fact, the HSUS didn't even oppose us when we passed this into law in other states, and states are looking at it now.
Do you support chimps and big cats in the pet trade?
My expertise is in reptiles.
You don't need expertise to make a judgment about whether people should be permitted to have a tiger in their home.
If they're qualified and they're responsible and they have the resources to be able to responsibly work with these animals, I don't see why not.
Who determines that?
I don't know. Like I said, I'm not part of the policy nuts and bolts on that.
This is the problem, Susan, is that there is no regulatory authority to inspect everyone's private home. You're talking about tens of thousands of people who have these animals. We don't have government inspectors at the ready who can start checking cage size and do testing to make sure that people are responsible. We need to make broad rules in society. And the rule is that domesticated animals belong in our lives and in our homes, but wild animals don't, except if they're a refugee or a cast-off. Then we have facilities like sanctuaries and zoos that are accredited that can provide professional support to do the best that you can within a captive setting.
Well, let's go to Cameron. He's calling us from Portland, Maine. Has been holding on. Cameron, thank you for being so patient.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Love the show. I just had a comment. I'm mostly concerned on the invasive side of this, is that this problem extends beyond the terrestrial realm, because there are people that collect exotic animals for aquariums as well. And they'll collect fish from the Pacific Ocean, and they'll have their aquarium in Florida. And whatever happens, maybe a hurricane, they just let them loose. They end up in the water. They end up in the Caribbean. And you don't know what's going to happen with an invasive species. So now, to just give an example, there's this this lionfish. And basically, this lionfish is in the Caribbean. It's already made its way up to Bermuda. And it's devastating local fish populations because it has evolved in Pacific Ocean over millions of years. And these ecologies don't know what to do with it. So it's an invasive problem. That's my main concern.
All right, Cameron, thanks so much for your call. Is this something, an area you work in yourself?
Well, I'm a graduate student in marine science, but this is not my area of expertise.
All right. Well, Cameron, thanks so much for giving us a call.
Well, I think here, Susan, what we've got is a balancing issue. I mean, Rexano, which is a private property rights group, and Andrew's organization, you know, fight regulations. They say that their personal liberty is the paramount issue. We're saying that there are a much larger set of issues at work, and that the protection of our environment, animal welfare, public safety, cost to the public should be factored in, and that when you take a look at the broader issue, there's just no compelling reason to continue to do this.
I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's go talk to Sandy, who's calling us from Baltimore. Sandy, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. First, I just want to say that I was an animal keeper for 28 years in large zoos. I also have been involved in reptile rescue with an unaccredited nonprofit for the past 20 years. So I've worked with a lot of different animals. I worked for 13 years just with primates. And I know from my own personal experience in training new keepers, it takes a long time to teach people how to take really quality care of exotics. And I just don't think that most people right off the bat are going to know how to take care of their exotic, nor is the private citizen on the whole going to begin to have the financial resources or the knowledge how to properly cage animals or provide the habitats they need to keep them happy. But the point I want to mention that hasn't been discussed here is in the case of reptiles, a lot of reptiles that are in our pet trade come from overseas, and so many of them die in the process of coming over here. And that's really underappreciated how much devastation we're doing to wild populations in order to support a trade in this country.
Sandy, thanks so much for your call. So you've been working in this field. What do you think? Do you think this ought to be banned for private ownership, regulated in some way? What is your idea about what ought to be done? Sandy?
Yes. Yes.
I'm wondering, what do you think we ought to do?
I don't think that people should be allowed to own wild exotics. And definitely that would be in the case of, you know, the large any of the cats and the bears and all of that. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a no-brainer. I think in the case of reptiles, I could imagine that captive-born small snakes that never achieve size would be okay. It's fairly easy to care for snakes. But I don't think in the case of turtles and lizards, which are other reptiles, that most people succeed. I had a specialty with arboreal lizards, which are tree-dwelling lizards, for quite a long time. I do turtle rescue now primarily. And it's really hard to meet their needs. And I just don't think people should be allowed to own them. And that would apply to both native species as well as exotics that are, you know, come from other countries. Mm-hmm. Because there are people who are dedicated and do a wonderful job of it, but most people don't. Mm-hmm. So for everyone that succeeds, there's just countless that don't. And you go to any pet shop or go to any trade show where they're selling the goods to care for these animals, and I know from my own personal experience, decades of experience, that what they're generally offering in terms of inflation, housing, products for nutrition, etc., are just so inadequate.
Sandy, thanks so much for giving your perspective. You know, we've had several emails like this one from Donna, who says, I would like to hear Mr. Pacelli address the emotional impact of confinement upon these animals. We've mainly been hearing about the safety issue associated with private ownership of exotic animals, but we haven't heard anything yet about the impact of such ownership on the animals themselves. I'm thinking about cases such as Tony the truck stop tiger and other similarly imprisoned animals. Just a little bit of time left. Yeah. Wayne, what would you say?
Well, the previous caller, let me say, I wholeheartedly agree with her assessment. And this goes back to the point that even if Andrew and a couple of other people, and I have no knowledge of his animal care performance, but if it's great, good for you. But the vast majority of people are not. But so the trade issue...
You have
issue,
no basis for that statement.
The trade issue... Yes, I do, because we work with these people all the time. Sandy was absolutely right about the trade issues. But the message that you just related, Susan, about the long-term confinement of animals, the fact that these animals, you know, have instincts and needs that cannot be met in these captive settings, that's why accredited zoos struggle with enrichment programs. And we're learning so much more about the needs of the animals. For a private citizen with almost no experience, no training, to deal with a complex set of behavioral needs of the animal is just an impossible situation.
I know that we have big divisions on this issue with our panel and with some of our callers, but we're out of time. I want to thank our panel for joining us, Susanna Kukul from the Responsible Exotic Animal Ownership Group, Andrew Wyatt, President of the United States Association of Reptile Keepers, and Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. Thank you all for being with us this hour on the Diane Rehm Show. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. She'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Denise Couture, Monique Nazareth, Nikki Jex, Susan Neighbors, and Lisa Dunn. And the engineer is Toby Schreiner. AC Valdez answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, podcasts, and CD sales. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from